Welcome to A Thousand Flowers Bloom, a podcast about interesting people and events in the Bay Area. Today I've got David Relind with me, who is one of the organizers of Mashup Camp. And David, before we start, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background?
Well, thanks, Chris, for having me on your show. Appreciate it. I don't know that I'm terribly interesting, or my background is I started off in computer science. I was a developer back in the 80s, eventually used that background to head over into the high-tech publishing business, and I was the director at PC Weeks Labs for a while, went on to be the editor-in-chief of a few of Ziff Davis's publications. Now I'm the executive editor at ZDNet, and I've been doing that for since about 1998, so I've been there for quite a while.
Cool. So you still have your finger on the pulse of what's going on?
I'd like to think so, but you know what? There's the pulse is so wide, it's hard to keep your finger on the entire thing, so thank God we have a lot of other people paying attention to it as well.
And tell me a little bit about Doug and his background, because he's your co-organizer on this thing, right?
Yeah, Doug Gold, just a terrific guy, and I met him back in the old Ziff Davis days when Ziff Davis had six divisions. One of them was the print division, the online division, and they had ZD Events, and ZD Events was all about Comdex, NetWorld, Interop. This was a big, it was a big division of the company running some of the industry's biggest events. And he was over there, and when the owner of the company, Masayoshi-san from SoftBank, you know, he had this vision of all these components kind of working together in harmony. I was working with him over at ZD Events while I was over in the print side, coming up with ideas of how events could work more closely with the print division. We formed a pretty good friendship, and more recently he was at IDG's World Expos. That's the organization that puts on the Syndicate Conference. Mm-hmm. They've had two of those so far, one out on the East Coast in New York City earlier last year in 2005, and then more recently in December of 2005 here in San Francisco. And when he put that event together, he asked me if I wanted to be on the advisory board. So it was great to be back working with him again. I was on the advisory board for that event, and most recently saw him here in San Francisco. And that's where sort of the inspiration for Mashup Camp came from.
So tell me a little bit about that. How did you guys decide that you should have a Mashup Camp?
Well, part of my job on the as a part of the advisory board, and it wasn't really a job, I don't get paid for it, anything like that, more of a volunteer thing, and I was doing it for Doug because I know Doug for a long time. By the way, Doug's also a cyclist, and I'm a cyclist. We both have a passion for cycling, so there's a real kind of connection there, too. We have connection outside of our professional interests. We talk about cycling all the time, Lance Armstrong, Tour de France type of stuff.
Cool.
After the last Syndicate conference, Doug held an advisory board meeting, and it was more of like a post-mortem, like what went right, what went wrong. We all kind of sat around a table talking about this. And it was during that meeting that I said, you know, I think that a conference that's about the RSS protocol, and that's really focused on this one specific application of the protocol, which is syndication. You know, RSS, of course, is about syndication, but a lot of people are using it in other ways, or they're kind of bending it a little bit. That maybe that's too narrow a focus for a conference. That RSS, really, if you think about it, is one of many APIs that a lot of developers out there building applications under the rubric of a mashup could or might use, and that this broad set of APIs that are out there, APIs that are coming from some big names like Google, Yahoo, AOL, Microsoft, eBay, Amazon, and also a lot of smaller companies like Technorati or Eventful.com, the events database, Brian Deere's company, that's more interesting. That's going to be the enabler of the next kind of revolution in technology and revolution in applications, and there's a lot more excitement happening around that. And really, the reason I came up with that sort of like discussion or that idea in the middle of this advisory board meeting was that while I was at the Syndicate conference, a lot of the people were talking about these other APIs. It was kind of like RSS is okay, but they had more interest, there's more buzz, more excitement around these other APIs, especially at some of the after-evening events. And so I just kind of blurted that out in the meeting. You know, I said, uh-huh. This would probably be a good idea. And so then on the way back, Doug and I actually flew. We sat next to each other on the plane going back, and I looked at him and I said, you know, I'd like to put together a mashup camp.
Uh-huh.
I think we should try to do that. And Doug, as it turns out, he was winding down with IDG. It was sort of the last project he worked on for IDG. And I said, you know, if I go ahead and try to organize something like Mashup Camp, do you want to help me with it?
Sure.
And he said, he goes, yeah, I think, you know, that sounds like a good idea. And so we talked about it a little bit more over the next few days. That was like December 16th, just this past December. Today is, what, January 25th. So it was a little more than a month ago. And so then we talked about it a little bit more, worked it out a little bit, just kind of, you know, I think that we just wanted to make sure that we weren't offending anybody by setting up Mashup Camp. And I'll leave it at that. And so then on December 22nd, I published a blog on ZDNet that said, I'm going to set up this thing called Mashup Camp, and if you're interested...
And it exploded.
Write to me. We had no idea what was going to happen next. It was like, oh my gosh. We were overwhelmed by the response immediately. A lot of different organizations, Ross Mayfield at Social Tech,
sure.
Brian Deere, his company, a lot of people came forward and said, this is an awesome idea, because we wanted to put the nuts and bolts people behind mashups together, not the top level CEOs, you know, at these different companies where they have these Web 2.0 conferences, but this is more about the people where the rubber meets the road, the people actually get the job done, who are innovating, coming up with great new mashups, the developers, the API architects at the different companies, and getting them together to brainstorm and do and just share ideas and just see what happened. And so there was just an amazing amount of interest for this sort of an unconference, because we're doing it in unconference style.
Uh-huh.
And as soon as we saw that, we asked Mary Hodder and Doc Searles if they would help us out from an advisory capacity, because Doug, being an ex-events guy, he's, you know, old school events, Comdex, NetWorld Interop, uh-huh. that kind of stuff. And for 15 years, I've been going to the same events. I'm kind of old school too. So this idea of doing things in an unconference format was a little foreign to us, and we knew we'd need some help.
So talk to me about why choose unconference versus make a ton of, I mean, there's obviously a huge demand for this thing. I mean, you could have charged, you know, hundreds of dollars for admittance. Why didn't you go that route?
I believe that in just kind of watching how some of the other so-called unconferences have gone, you know, Barcamp, TagCamp, the idea of what should be happening in an event like this has kind of gotten away from people. What I mean by that, or from the organizers, this idea that somebody should be standing at a podium with a PowerPoint slide presentation behind them, presenting to hundreds of people, I've been doing that for a long enough time to know that's a really bad idea. It's a real waste of time for a lot of people who are in the audience. The most interesting part of those types of presentations is the Q&A. And when you think about what an unconference is about, it's more about 100% Q&A and a real sharing of ideas. And it's kind of like a town meeting in some ways, you know, we think about it. And that is so much more interesting to me to be able to attend an event like that than it would be to sit and listen to some talking heads up on a podium or behind a dais, presenting to an audience. And knowing that a few of these have already been pulled off and they've been very successful, you know, we said, well, if we're going to come up with an event that's about this new technology, these new technologies that are largely very social technologies, you know, you hear about mm-hmm. the social network, then the event itself better be a very social, forward-looking event as well. And so right away we said, let's do it this way, and let's not only do it in the unconference format, but let's start from the get-go and say, from now and until for eternity, as long as we have anything to do with this event, it's going to be free to attend, because that's uh-huh. the way events should be. It's also, you know, we want to take the unconference idea. We believe events. I don't want to say we want to reinvent events, because I think somebody else has already done that in coming up with this. I don't want to take credit for that. I think it is definitely time for events to be reinvented. And I think in some ways, You know, a lot of these event companies that are out there have this format where they collect money from vendors on one side who are paying for the right to get access to the audience who's attending on the other side. And meanwhile, the audience is paying to come and attend this event. There's something just morally wrong with that approach, right? I mean, literally, you know, if vendors want to get at that audience, they should pay for that right. And that audience, you know, should be in some way rewarded for coming and being exposed to vendors. Now, we don't have a traditional sponsorship model with this. The vendors aren't paying for the right to have access to the developers at Mashup Camp. What we realized was to make, first of all, we wanted to validate the idea that these people all want to be at the same room at the same time. So let's just get that figured out.
So you've succeeded.
We think we did. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You're sold out.
Like, what happened? Like, 7 days. We published this wiki, you know, and 7 days. Thanks to Ross Mayfield, by the way. Great job on behalf of him and his team at Social Text in helping us get the site launched. I went out and I got the domain and all that right away. 7 days, we had. We said we're going to allow 250 people in the event. On January 9th, we published this wiki with the sign-up page. And 7 days later, it was completely filled up, and the list of names just blew us away. You know, it was big companies, small companies, developers, people writing emails to us saying how excited they were. It wasn't just like an event where it was like, okay, I got to schlep my way out there and all that and do this event. People were genuinely excited about the idea of getting together with this group.
So why is this such a big deal? Why, you seem to have hit a nerve here. Why do you think so many people are so excited about the idea of mashups now?
The whole gestalt of rap. Of mashups is an incredibly enabling. It's all about enabling technologies. It's all about, I think, the next ecosystem that's going to have the doors blown off of it. If you think about ecosystems in sort of the developer platform sense, you look back on some of the previous ones that have been very successful, OS X or Macintosh, Windows of course, Linux. The way that the ecosystem works is you've got this platform and the platform is 95% APIs that make it really easy for developers to build applications for that platform. APIs for drawing windows or accessing the network or the file system or whatever. The APIs do all this heavy lifting, and it's about 5% user interface, you know, the user experience. And in those ecosystems, the draw for users to an ecosystem like Windows is the fact that you can get a lot of things done with it. It's the applications that run on it. So there's a bunch of applications and a bunch of users say, okay, I'm going to go get Windows because, hey, I can get a lot of things done and a lot of applications for it. Well, once the applications beget users, then developers suddenly get interested in that ecosystem because they see a market, a growing market that they can tap and make money off of. So users beget developers, and then more developers come in, gets more applications, and the thing sort of becomes a vicious cycle that gets bigger and bigger and bigger and snowballs. That's kind of what happened to Windows, right? I mean, and that's in some ways what happened to any platform, be it Linux or OS X, Macintosh, whatever, the Macintosh operating system that came before OS X. And if you think about, if you look at a mashup and you say, well, what is a mashup? Well, it's where a developer took one or more APIs that were on the internet and mash them together, and then presented the results in a user interface. Well, wait a minute. Then really, when you think about the fact that they're using APIs, it turns out that the internet is becoming just this collection of APIs, just like an operating system is. And those APIs do some of the same things that the APIs in an operating system do. But maybe it's the Google Maps API, or maybe it's the Flickr API, or the Delicious API.
Uh-huh.
And it's a user interface. It's a browser. It's the same thing. And the great thing about this is that the availability of these APIs to do all the heavy lifting. I mean, imagine before, if you were a web developer and you had to build something that put a map on the screen. Well, now Google makes that really easy. Yahoo makes that really easy. There's all these mapping APIs on the web. It's an enabling platform the same way an operating system was for developers. And the beauty of it here, though, is that whereas before with operating systems, you had to be like a C programmer to turn your creativity into an innovation. Now, you go to a couple different API providers, you get some sample code, you cut and paste it, and 15 minutes later, you have an application.
Sure.
I mean, it's not a mashup. I mean, people call it mashup, but let's be honest, it's an application. If it's the Chicago crime database that's merged together with Google Maps, and it shows you everywhere in a particular zip code where crimes took place. That's an application. That's what an application does. It delivers information to you. So, you know, when you look at this, you say, wow, this is going to be the next ecosystem. This thing, you know, just like Windows, just like OS X, just like Linux, this is the next big thing that developers are going to be drawn to because users are drawn to it, and they're going to want to get access to those users. They're going to want people to come use that. And now because that's happening, you've got the API providers who want to capture the interest of developers and use their platform. Let's face it, they don't know what the business model is, but at the end of the day, right now, if you're going to build an application that uses Maps, Yahoo wants you to build it on Yahoo Maps, and Google wants you to build it in Google Maps.
Sure,
and so they'll do anything to get the attention of developers. And that's why an event like this is a really great idea, because it's a good opportunity for the two to reach each other and talk about what they have. You know, API providers can talk about what they have to offer, and developers can grill them on how good it is, you know, how good the things they have to offer are. And already we're hearing these different companies, AOL, Google, Yahoo, talk about what they have, not as APIs, but a platform.
Uh-huh.
You know, it started off as maybe one or two APIs, but then it turns into a larger collection of APIs, which in itself becomes a platform. And the final thing that makes this ecosystem more exciting than any other is that if you look at the previous ecosystems, whether it was, you know, the operating system-based ones, ultimately, at the end of the day, somebody had to decide what APIs get into the ecosystem. You know,
right.
There's some guy at Microsoft, I don't know who he is, who decides which APIs are going to make it to the next version of Windows and which one's going to have to wait.
Sure.
Guess what? With this one, no one decides.
Right. Everybody decides.
Right. Well, if you want to put an API in the platform,
you just do it.
You don't have to answer to anybody. And by the way, the minute you do that, the validation of whether it's useful or not is whether developers start to come and use it or not.
Yep.
You know, and so John Musser has a really cool site, mashupfeed.com, and in the top right-hand corner of his site, he has a number, and it's computing. It shows you the sort of basic baseline statistics. There's like 144. I don't know when I last looked, there's 144 APIs out there, and there's like 360 mashups. But the one thing he's showing you is that every day, 2.69 new mashups. I think that was the last time I looked at it. It was yesterday. 2.69 new mashups, new applications, are showing up on this rubric of you know, across these APIs.
Sure.
Every day. I would argue that by the end of this year, that number will probably be closer to 10, and the number of APIs by the end of next year will be closer to 1,000, and you're going to see the fastest growing ecosystem in the history of our industry. Largely because it's so easy to develop a mashup. Ordinary people with great creativity can take that creativity and turn it into an innovation without having to become C programmers or something.
So all these people who are calling for, you know, a crash, you know, it's bubble 2.0 and there's a crash, you think there's a lot of room to grow still?
Oh, I think we're going to see bubble 2.0. I have no doubt about that. But I also feel as though, you know, if you look through the previous bubbles, there was a certain underlying level of innovation that never stopped. And there were companies that were behind those innovations that had the wherewithal to kind of survive the bubble. And there are plenty of those companies around today. And so the innovation will continue. And it's the excitement around the idea of being able to create a mashup. I mean, your grandmother can create a mashup, right? I mean, right now, you know, have you ever been to mapbuilder.net?
Uh-huh.
What an awesome, I mean, what's happened there is the developer of mapbuilder.net, Andrew, he's making it possible for ordinary people to mash up databases with maps. And so you don't have to do a whole lot of work, for example, to build a mashup that shows you all of the bird sightings in Central Park.
Sure.
Your grandmother could actually do that. Now, the fact that people can express themselves in software, look at what happened to the blogosphere. As soon as you made it possible for people to express themselves with text, it took off. Really all it is advanced web authoring with a bunch of navigation built in, if you think about what blogs are. So, but the fact that you didn't have to be author web pages, that you just had to fill out a form and boom, the web page is up along with all the accoutrement, the navigation, the search and everything, that was real enabling technology. This is the same thing. It's enabling ordinary people to build incredibly innovative, creative things, and you're going to see a lot of expression in software and mashups, the same way you saw personal expression with the blogosphere.
So one of the things you were talking about before was, you know, how really this sort of new web as a platform, you know, and becoming the new ecosystem is really analogous to really what Windows was before on the PC, Linux, and the other operating systems. Do you think that we're going to start seeing things like, here's the storage API that, you know, sort of the exact analogs of what we saw
absolutely.
On the PC?
Absolutely. It's already happening. Box.net is going to be here at Mashup Camp, mm-hmm. and they're going to be talking about the storage APIs.
Okay.
You know, I mean, there's going to be a lot of competition, just the way Google and Yahoo want you to use their mapping APIs. You're going to see all kinds of APIs, whether it be for storage or identity management. You know, it's going to explode because this is exactly, you know, this is the way ecosystems grow, and developers have always been the key to the growth of any ecosystem. Without developers building applications, you know, the providers of the underlying platforms and technologies generally don't get a lot of buzz and don't get a lot of traction. This is the way it's going to happen. It's going to happen just the way all the other ecosystems happen, and the goal of all the API providers is to reach out and find the developers. What Mashup Camp is, it's the event where they can do that.
Sure.
And the great thing about it is that we've organized it right now in a way that nobody's paying for the right to have that discussion. There are plenty of API providers there who are not sponsoring the event in any way, shape, or form. They just signed up first, and they're free to come, grab a table in the big room at the Computer History Museum, and invite developers over to talk about what it is they have to offer. Hand them whatever materials they want. However it is they want to do it, they can do it.
Sure.
We're leaving that completely open.
So I was talking with the VP of Developer Relations over at Yahoo, and it seems like Yahoo and Google, these guys are all making a big push into this API area, and you see, you know, they're sort of competing to release as many APIs as possible. But, you know, everybody I've talked to there is sort of like, well, we're not sure what the model around this is. Do you think that they're sort of, you know, boy, they better figure out the business model behind this in the next, you know, 6 months or so, or else this API stuff's going to go away, or do you think it's here to stay?
Well, I won't name names, but I've been talking to all the same people, you know, that, you know, who are in this business and are facing that problem right now.
Uh-huh.
And that is a problem. I mean, if you look back at their platform and you look at what happens underneath the hood and all the people who have to make those APIs happen and the salaries they get paid, eventually there's a guy, an accountant, who can tell you how much it costs every time the API is accessed.
Sure.
And actually they do have that number. And they're already trying to think about, okay, well, how do we, you know, do we just recover that cost? Do we make money? You know, what is the business model? Do we want to break even? Do we want to make money? How is that going to work? And so what better way to find out what model works than to be able to get everybody in the room together? Because the people, if there's going to be a business model and there's got to be some sort of compensation involved or something like that, who better to talk to about that than the developers who are going to use those APIs in the first place? And so that's one of the discussions.
Sounds like a good session for Mashup Camp.
If you go to the Mashup Camp wiki, you'll see that that's one of the sessions that people have asked for.
Sure.
And that what they want to talk. It's going to be a great session for the API providers and the developers to get together and talk about that issue. The API providers want to get feedback to find out what exactly developers have in mind and what they would be willing to do and or tolerate, you know, licensing and all that kind of stuff. So the whole ecosystem is in such an embryonic state that it makes so much sense to have an event like this so that they can start talking about those issues now and come up with some workable solutions that will be agreeable to everybody. And
sure.
So the issues that are being discussed at Mashup Camp aren't just that. I mean, there are plenty of other issues. We've got some really heavy-duty enterprise people coming in, enterprise types, who see a lot of value in the whole idea of APIs being available on the web and being able to tap them in their applications.
Well, we Salesforce.com is sort of they're the poster child, right? They're locking everybody in.
So that's
in.
An API provider, but we got guys, banker guys coming in, government uh-huh. people coming in. We've got some really great, and you can go and look at the list. That's a public list, right? And so they have questions about reliability. Like, you know, what happens if the API goes down, does it take down your whole application? So what are these API providers doing to guarantee the uptime of the API?
Sure.
Because once you go out and build an application on something, but you're relying on a third party to kind of provide the power behind it, you know, you're also relying on a third party to up, you know, they're basically you're building your business on what they provide. Mm-hmm. And so there's got to be something there, you know. Another question is identity management. You know, some of these systems are require some identity management. So what's being done in terms of identity management, security? A lot of questions around this that developers have. Some of the guys have raised the question of, well, what about changes to the APIs? If we don't know an API is being changed, the first time we hear about it is when our application breaks.
Yep.
So are there going to be some standards for APIs and not only just standards in terms of like what a mapping API standard might be, you know, and maybe Google and Yahoo and those guys can work out the standard for mapping APIs, but also best practices for how API providers update their APIs and what the business process is in the event that they do update, how they notify developers or mm-hmm. how they keep track of that. Sessions about licensing and Creative Commons, all of this stuff is a part of this ecosystem, and so all these discussions are going to take place, and all the people who are the key people who know intimately, have intimate familiarity with these topics are going to be there to talk about it. So, you know, it is really embryonic phase of this ecosystem. What a great time to have all of these discussions, and they're all going to be had.
Sure. So, given the success of at least those registrations, and I'm assuming the event's gonna be really successful too. When's the next one? And actually, we should tell listeners when's this one? Feb 20 and 21st, right?
February 20th and 21st at the Computer History Museum in Mountain View, California.
Right. But if you're not on the wiki, if you're not signed up, you're too late.
There's a waiting list. Last time I looked, the waiting list had 50 something people on it. We started off with 250. A lot of people want to know, why don't you make it 500 people? You know, what's going on with that? And so you have to remember that we're not making any money on this. There's no money to be made. We're matching up need with people who can fill the need. So give you an example. We feel like it would be a good idea to have coffee and tea and sodas there for the duration of the event. And so wouldn't it be great if somebody who thinks that the event should be a success could step forward and be the provider of that? Right, and so Microsoft is going to be the official beverage provider of the for the event.
Excellent.
And they're going to be the ones who, they're just going to make sure that the stuff is there when the event starts. And so we have all sorts of opportunities like that. And we're sort of stepping out. We're saying, no, don't give us money, so we go get the sodas and the drinks. Just make sure they're there, you know. And so.
So what other sort of provider opportunities are there for people to step
up for? Well, there's a whole bunch
of
them. You know, there's the food, lunch, you know, continental breakfast, lunch, there's the reception. A lot of these are filled in already. Some are still open. But the point is that we started off with 250 people. And at some point, you have to say, okay, that's the number of people coming because these people who are stepping up to the plate and providing things have to have a head count to work off of.
Right.
So we're at a point now where, for example, eBay is already making the T-shirts.
Sure.
Okay? So we can't go back to eBay and say, okay, please make another 150 T-shirts. That wouldn't just be fair. You know, they need time to kind of contact their T-shirt maker and all. So we're already past the point of no return on a lot of items where, you know, a couple people would walk away either hungry or without T-shirts or something like that. So so we bumped it to 50. We added 50 new people. So we allowed 50 more people in. So the event is up to 300 people. And there's about 50 people on the waiting list, and I would say that we still don't have confirmation from almost 100 people. We've put the thing out on the wiki that says, look, if you don't confirm by email, you could forfeit your registration.
Sure.
We don't want a thing where somebody signed up, it just doesn't show up, and then there's somebody on the waiting list who ends up having to wait and couldn't get in.
Yeah.
There's still opportunity for people who are on the waiting list to get in, and if you're not on the waiting list, go ahead and put your name on the waiting list, and at the same time, let us know. Why is it a good thing? Well, guess what? Even if you don't get into this event, we already know that we have to have another one.
Yep.
And so we don't have the details worked out of when that would be. We already have a couple different sites on the East Coast who are saying we'd like to host the next mashup camp, and we're talking to them. I don't want to say who they are because they haven't.
Oh, come on, you're gonna give me the scoop here.
They haven't given me. I gotta respect them. They haven't given me any sort of approval to say yes, we're talking to you. So I have to be honest about that.
Sure.
We're trying to be as transparent as possible about everything as we possibly can. And so, you know, where the next one's going to be and how the next one's going to be organized and all that, you know, we're obviously already thinking about those things, but we just, you know, right now, I think Doug and I are squarely focused on making February 20th and 21st a really great event, and we're trying to just kind of not get too distracted by what comes after. We really want this to be a great event.
Sure. So, and my last question for you, David, is what's the mashup that you most hope somebody will build at the event? Is there something that you're sort of dying to see?
Well, okay, so you're talking about something that's a really important part of the event, which is going to be a hackathon, right?
Right.
And one of the reasons the Computer History Museum is so interested in this event is because this event is about the future of computing, but they're the caretakers of its past.
Sure.
So they think there's a real kind of thing.
It's pretty cool.
And the hackathon is all about, on the second day, is all about, so we've got the developers who've been walking around gathering all sorts of information from all these API providers. What are you going to do with that? Well, let's create some mashups. And so what you're asking me is what's going to be the next coolest mashup? And I can't tell you, because I think we're going to hear new things. We're going to hear about new APIs that are going to inspire the people who are at the event to develop things that we can't possibly think of. This is the whole business of taking creativity and turning it into innovation and being able to do it rather quickly. I'm not going to venture a guess there.
Nothing on your wish list?
Something's going to blow your mind. Something's going to blow my mind. And the vote will come from the attendees, because what we're going to do is we're going to let all the attendees, each attendee is going to get to cast one vote for the best mashup. The winner... And so this is something that is new. You're going to get to hear
right.
this first on your the winning prize is a completely tricked out server, a Niagara based server from Sun.
Wow.
I mean, it's like a totally tricked out server. We're so excited, because this is like, you know, if you think about Sun has always talked about how the network is the computer. And so they were really quick to say, we'd like to provide, you know, make a server the thing that would actually power these sorts of applications, be the first prize. So that's the first prize. We haven't announced that yet. It's not on the website yet. I just finally got the configuration from Sun, basically on my BlackBerry while I was heading over to the hotel here. So that's the first prize. And so what's the coolest mashup? Well, we'll let the people who are the 300 people in attendance vote on that. And
right.
by the way, the inspiration for how we're setting that up came from the old chili cook-off at Comdex, where you get to vote with a wooden nickel for the best chili among like 400 chili booths that were put in place by all the different vendors. And so we'll try to find some wooden nickels, and you'll be able to drop a wooden nickel in the best mashups cup.
Well, David, this sounds awesome, and I wish you the best of luck with the event.
Chris, I know you're signed up, so we're looking forward to seeing
you. I'll see
you there.
I'll be podcasting from the event too.
Awesome. We'd love to have as much you know, coverage of the event as possible. There's no way somebody like me from ZDNet's going to be able to get to everything there.
All right. Thanks, David.
Thanks, Chris.